All right, so today we're going to take a deep dive into the book of Ezekiel. You probably heard of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, most people have at least heard of Ezekiel, right? But today we're going to uncover some of the things that make Ezekiel so fascinating,
Yeah.
especially when we consider that he was both a priest and a prophet, and how that really shaped his message.
Right.
And our main source today is this series of lectures from a leading Ezekiel scholar. And trust me, there are some surprising insights here.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, so to kick things off, one of the most important things to remember about Ezekiel is that he wasn't just, up there on a mountaintop giving pronouncements.
Right.
He was in exile.
Yeah, he's living in exile. He's a priest in exile,
exactly.
which means he's dealing with a double displacement,
Well,
right?
wow, yeah.
Not only have he been physically uprooted from the temple, but his audience, his fellow exiles, they're not exactly thrilled to hear prophecies of boom.
Yeah, it's like trying to tell someone bad news when they're, trying to have a good time.
Right.
How do you even get them to listen to that?
That's where Ezekiel's methods come in, and they were anything but subtle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're talking dramatic trances, symbolic actions, even claiming to be transported by God.
Wow.
And it wasn't just for show.
Okay.
Imagine you're one of those exiles, right? You've lost everything, your home, your temple, your sense of security.
Right.
And then you see this priest falling into trances, acting out these strange scenarios, and claiming to be speaking directly for God.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely get your attention.
It would be impossible to ignore.
Yeah. But wasn't Ezekiel known for his, fire and brimstone preaching? That's
Right.
what I always thought.
That's a common misconception.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the judgment is a huge theme in Ezekiel, especially in the period before 587 BC, the year Jerusalem falls.
Right.
But there's a lot more going on. For example, Ezekiel often uses that classic prophetic formula. It has those five key components:
Okay.
covenant grace, the obligation to follow God's laws, Israel's failure to do so,
Right.
God's rejection of their disobedience, and ultimately the promise of eventual renewal.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
What's interesting is how Ezekiel, at least initially, really hammers home the judgment aspect.
Yeah.
He even goes so far as to twist the Exodus story,
The Exodus story.
yeah, which is usually about God's grace and liberation, right?
Right, of course.
To show that sin was present from the very beginning.
Wait, so he's saying that even during the Exodus, when God was saving them,
Yep.
they were already messing up.
Pretty much.
Wow. That's a pretty bold claim.
It is.
I mean, why reinterpret such a central story in such a negative light?
It might seem shocking, but this is where we see Ezekiel's background as a priest coming into play.
Okay.
He was obsessed with ritual purity and obedience to the law.
I see.
He saw Israel's failures not just as political missteps, but as deep-seated spiratory transgressions.
Right.
To him, the Exodus wasn't just about physical freedom, it was about spiritual purity.
Okay.
And in his eyes, Israel had failed on that front right from the start.
So if we're talking about obedience to the law, then where does Leviticus fit into all of this?
Ah, yes. Leviticus, specifically Leviticus 26,
Okay.
is practically Ezekiel's secret weapon.
What do you mean?
This chapter details the covenant curses,
Right.
the consequences of disobedience, and Ezekiel quotes it repeatedly throughout his prophecies.
Why Leviticus 26 specifically? I mean, there are plenty of warnings about disobedience in the Bible, right?
It's brilliant, really.
Yeah.
Remember, Ezekiel's audience is primarily exiled priests.
Right.
Leviticus, as a book focused on priestly duties and rituals,
Okay.
would have been a text they knew well and considered authoritative.
Makes sense.
By quoting Leviticus 26, he's not just issuing warnings,
Yeah.
he's using language and imagery that would resonate deeply with his audience,
Right.
drawing on their shared understanding of the covenant and its consequences.
Okay.
He's basically saying, look, you know this book, you respect this book, and it spills out exactly what happens when you disobey God. This isn't some new idea. This is the foundation of our relationship with God.
So he's using their own scriptures to hold up a mirror to their actions. Clever. It sounds like he really understood how to tailor his message for maximum impact.
Absolutely. And it's not all doom and gloom either. After 587 BC, when Jerusalem actually falls,
Right?
Ezekiel's message shifts in a fascinating way.
How so?
He receives a new commission to be a watchman warning the exiles of wrongdoing.
So it becomes less about national judgment and more about individual responsibility.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a pretty significant shift. Tell me more about this watchman role.
It's a fascinating concept. The idea of the watchman comes from ancient cities, where someone would be stationed on the walls to watch for approaching danger.
Okay.
In Ezekiel's case, he becomes a watchman for the spiritual well-being of the exiles.
Interesting.
His job is to warn them about sin and urge them to repent, even in the midst of their exile.
So even though they've lost everything, they still have choices to make.
Right.
They still have to take responsibility for their actions. That actually makes Ezekiel seem more relatable, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, we all face situations where we have to make tough choices, even when things are falling apart around us.
That's a great point. This shift towards individual accountability makes Ezekiel's message incredibly relevant, even today.
Right.
He's essentially saying that no matter what your circumstances, you always have the power to choose how you respond, you know?
Yeah.
How you live your life, how you relate to God.
It's a powerful message. And I'm really curious to learn more about this watchman concept and how it plays out in the book.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, I want to go back to something you said earlier about Ezekiel's methods.
You mean his traumatic trances and symbolic actions?
Exactly. Those really stood out to me. Can you tell me more about those? What kinds of things did he actually do? And what was the significance of these actions?
Well, let's see. Well, Ezekiel's actions were often quite strange, you know,
right.
Even disturbing to modern readers.
Right.
Like, for example, he once lay on his side.
On his side.
For over a year.
Wow.
Symbolizing the length of Israel's siege and exile.
Okay.
He also ate food cooked over dung.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Representing the defilement of the people.
Yeah, when you mentioned him eating food cooked over dung, I have to admit that one always stuck with me from Ezekiel.
Right.
It's such a visceral image.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think was going through his mind when he was doing these things?
It's hard to say for sure, of course, but we can speculate. Remember, he was trying to reach a traumatized, disbelieving audience.
Right.
People who'd lost everything.
Yeah.
And probably didn't want to hear that it was their fault.
Of course.
So these shocking actions would have been impossible to ignore.
Right.
They forced people to confront the reality of their situation and the severity of their sins.
It's like he's saying, if you won't listen to my words, maybe you'll pay attention to my actions.
Exactly. He was a master of using symbolism and performance to drive home his message.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important to remember that this wasn't entirely unheard of in prophetic traditions.
You know,
Think of Elijah being taken up to heaven in a whirlwind.
Right.
Or even earlier prophets who used symbolic actions to convey God's message.
That's right. I'd forgotten about those stories. So Ezekiel was drawing on a long tradition of prophetic performance, but he definitely took it to a whole new level.
Absolutely. And I think that's partly because of his dual role as priest and prophet.
Okay.
He understood the power of ritual and symbolism from his priestly background.
Right.
And he combined that with the passionate urgency of a prophet.
So it's like he's using every tool in his arsenal.
Right.
Storytelling, symbolism, dramatic performance, all of it.
Exactly.
To break through their resistance and make them confront the reality of their situation.
Precisely. And don't forget the historical context.
Right, of course.
Ezekiel is prophesying during a time of immense upheaval.
Mm-hmm.
The old certainties, the temple, the monarchy, their very homeland.
Yeah.
All of it's been shattered. He's speaking into a very specific and very painful historical moment.
So he's not just delivering abstract theological pronouncements.
Right.
He's responding to a real crisis.
Yeah.
Trying to make sense of it for himself and for his people.
Exactly. And that context shapes not only his message, but also the way he delivers it. He has to find a way to reach people who are grieving, disoriented,
yeah,
and frankly, exhausted from years of turmoil. It makes you wonder how much of Ezekiel's style was about tailoring his message to that specific audience, you know?
Yeah.
Making it resonate with their experience.
That's a fascinating question. It makes me think about how we communicate today.
Right.
Sometimes you have to really tailor your message to your audience to make sure it gets through.
Absolutely. And what's undeniable is that Ezekiel's approach was incredibly effective. His prophecies, for all their strangeness and sometimes disturbing imagery,
right,
have resonated across centuries.
They definitely suck with us.
And that's a testament to his power as a communicator. He managed to blend the authority of a priest, the passion of a prophet,
mm-hmm,
and the skill of a master storyteller to create a body of work that continues to challenge and intrigue us today.
Okay, so we've talked about Ezekiel, man, his context, his methods.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the structure of the book itself? You mentioned it's a bit unique.
It is. On one level, it follows a fairly straightforward chronological structure.
Okay.
With dates marking the progression of Ezekiel's prophecies.
Right.
From his call in 593 BC to a vision of a new temple in 573 BC.
Wow, so we're literally following his prophetic journey over two decades.
Exactly. And that journey is broadly divided into two halves.
Okay.
The first, leading up to the fall of Jerusalem in 587 BC,
right,
focuses primarily on pronouncements of judgment.
The doom and gloom phase.
Right, as we called it earlier.
Yeah.
But then after 587 BC, there's a shift towards messages of hope and restoration.
Okay.
Ezekiel envisions a renewed Israel, a new temple, a future where God's presence dwells among his people once more.
So it's not all fire and brimstone. There's a glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel.
There is. But even within that structure, there are some interesting wrinkles.
Like what?
For example, sprinkled throughout the first half, even before Jerusalem's fall.
Okay.
There are these glimpses of hope.
Really?
These hints of a future restoration, almost like seeds planted amidst the pronouncements of judgment.
It's like even in the midst of judgment, he's reminding them that God hasn't abandoned them completely.
Exactly. And one of the most striking examples is that Watchman Commission we discussed earlier.
Right.
It actually appears twice in the book.
Twice.
Once early on, and then again after the fall of Jerusalem.
So it's both a foreshadowing and a reinforcement of this idea of individual responsibility.
Precisely. And that dual placement highlights a key theme that runs throughout Ezekiel's prophecies,
which is
individual accountability.
Okay.
Even amidst national disaster, there's this emphasis on personal responsibility.
Right.
On choosing to align oneself with God's will.
So even when he's talking about national judgment,
yeah,
he's also reminding them that they have choices to make, even in exile.
Right.
Their fate isn't sealed. They can still turn back to God.
Right. And that message, I think, is what makes Ezekiel so relevant even today.
Mm-hmm.
He reminds us that even in the face of overwhelming challenges.
Yeah.
Even when it seems like all hope is lost,
right,
we still have the capacity to choose to turn towards God to find meaning and purpose in our lives.
Wow.
It really speaks to the enduring power of his message, you know?
Yeah.
A message that transcends time and circumstance to challenge us to confront our own relationship with God and our responsibility to live lives that reflect his will.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
Ezekiel the priest, the prophet, the exile, the visionary, the master storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen how all these facets come together to create this incredibly complex and compelling portrait of a man wrestling with God,
yeah,
with his people,
right,
and with the very meaning of faith in the face of unimaginable loss.
It's powerful stuff.
It really is. It's mind-blowing to think how this one book written thousands of years ago can still speak to us so powerfully today.
That's the beauty of these ancient texts.
It is.
They grapple with timeless questions about faith, justice, responsibility, and the nature of God, questions that continue to resonate across cultures and centuries.
So knowing what we now know about Ezekiel, about his context, his methods, his struggles,
yeah,
does that change how we read and understand his message? Oh yeah, definitely for me. He's no longer just this, you know, distant, enigmatic figure.
Right.
He's a real person.
Yeah.
Grappling with real challenges and trying to make sense of them in a way that speaks to his audience, even if it means using some pretty unconventional methods.
Exactly. Instead of seeing Ezekiel as just a remote figure spouting pronouncements of doom.
Right.
We can appreciate him as a complex individual,
yeah,
deeply embedded in his historical moment.
Makes sense.
Grappling with immense challenges and ultimately offering a message of both judgment and hope. A message that continues to challenge and inspire us today.
You know, when you put it that way, it makes me think about how we often interpret historical figures, or even religious texts.
Right.
We can get so caught up in the surface level,
yeah,
and the pronouncements and the doctrines,
mm-hmm,
that we forget there were real people behind these messages.
Right.
People who wrestled with doubt and uncertainty, just like we do.
That's such an important point, and it's particularly relevant to Ezekiel because his book is so full of vivid imagery, symbolic actions.
Right.
And even these moments of intense emotional struggle, he doesn't shy away from the difficult questions.
No.
And he doesn't pretend to have all the answers.
It's like we've peeled back the layers of history and encountered a real person, a human being wrestling with faith and doubt, with despair.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, with a vision of a future where God's presence would be restored.
Precisely. And that, I think, is the ultimate takeaway from our deep dive into Ezekiel. It's not just about understanding an ancient text.
Right.
It's about recognizing the enduring power of faith.
Yeah.
Even in the face of overwhelming adversity.
It's about recognizing that even the most challenging, even the most seemingly bizarre, prophetic pronouncements can offer profound insights into the human condition and our relationship with the divine.
It's about realizing that these texts aren't just historical artifacts. They're living documents that continue to speak to us across millennia,
right,
inviting us to engage with them, to wrestle with their complexities, and ultimately to find meaning and inspiration in their timeless wisdom.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Ezekiel, I'm left with one final thought for you. How might we in our own lives embrace that spirit of prophetic witness? How can we, like Ezekiel, speak truth to power, challenge complacency, and offer a vision of a future where justice, compassion, and the presence of God reign supreme? It's a question worth pondering, isn't it? Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.